Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 393. My name's John Reardon, and I am joined today by Alex DeFreitas.
A very cold, frigid Alex DeFreitas, yes.
Yes, it is a...
I'm holed up here under a blanket and two sweaters.
Yeah, how is your, like... So, I mean, I guess context for people. Me and Alex both live in the central time zone, but in very different climates of the central time zone. So... For me, it has been like in the negative teens for the past few days, which has been very cold for where I live. Alex, you've been in what, like the teens and 20s?
Yeah.
Below freezing?
So still firmly in double digits.
Yes, but you live in the south.
Yes.
Where it shouldn't be like that.
No, we're not built for it. We're not prepared. I was supposed to work on MLK Day, but and why would they have me come into the office for that? But thankfully the weather was so bad and our roads are so shit that I was able to work from home at least. So
good.
The one good thing, but yeah, we're doing our best.
Yeah,
we're trying.
Is like your power holding up and everything?
Oh, it's fine. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
It has been. But my apartment complex has been very vocal about, hey, you better be running your water.
Oh, yeah.
Keep those faucets dripping.
Yeah. Yeah, as I've had my pipes freeze before, and I don't recommend it. So, yeah, this is your reminder that if you're somewhere below freezing, keep your pipes dripping. Especially if they run along an exterior wall. Just a good idea. But today... We're in kind of that weird period at the beginning of the year where it doesn't really feel like gaming has started for the year yet.
Yep.
So there isn't that much to talk about. So we're probably going to do a shorter episode this week.
We're post like 2023 reflections and game of the year lists and deliberations and all that award season. And now we're just waiting for games to come out.
Yeah. But I would say that probably the first somewhat major release of the year, at least for me, is this Thursday, the day before this podcast comes out, and that's Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown. I got a code for this, so I've played it already. And Alex, you said you just finished the demo.
Yes.
What's your first impressions of this?
This game is real slick and feels very nice to play. I love a good double jump and I love a good midair dash, and they nailed those.
Yeah.
It moving from platform to platform feels very smooth, almost Dread-like, if I can say.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Is that me going a little too far? Because Dread is buttery smooth.
No, I think you can definitely. I remember when we were talking about it before it, like during the review period, compared it to like the. I think Neil compared it to the Spider-Man games, like the PS4 Spider-Man games. Like, it's so bouncy in its movement, which I thought was an interesting comparison. I like the thing I noticed that I think certain members of NWR staff will enjoy is that you can climb up a vertical shaft once you get that air dash on a single wall, because you can just wall jump off it, dash back to it, wall jump off it again, and dash back to it again. Which is really, you know, the sign of a great Metroidvania.
Yeah, we'll need to find out if there are any major sequence breaks.
I feel like there've gotta be.
Really count.
I never felt like I ran into anywhere where the game was like being aggressive about stopping me from going somewhere.
I played the demo, so the game was very aggressive about stopping me from going anywhere.
Does it have like invisible walls in the demo of like, no, you can't do that yet?
Or... Yeah, they're like slightly transparent blue walls.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So that must be special for the demo. It almost reminded me of, like, if you took, I guess you did the Castlevania Game Club, so you'll know this. It reminded me of if you took Castlevania, the Metroid-style Castlevanias, and then took out everything that's bad about them. Like, there's no dumb RPG mechanics or leveling up, but you still get, like, the quick, fast, melee-focused, movement-focused Metroid game. So it really did make me feel like I want Castlevania games that are like this.
Because it seems like the world is a lot bigger, like a Castlevania game.
Yeah.
You move faster through it. But there's less puzzle stuff to worry about.
Less puzzles, a lot more combat, but like the combat's really good, unlike Castlevania.
Well, it's like a full-on action game. You got parries and dodges and combos and midair like combos you could also pull off. It's really fully fleshed out.
I'm glad that the thing from Samus Returns that people can like really critiqued about it is the thing that is stuck around in Metroidvanias now. like people were like, I don't know about this melee counter thing, but then apparently every game designer was like, we love the melee counter thing. Because parries in this cut, like, just it all feels so good.
The parry enemies, and then,
like, dashing under them, and like, it is fantastic, and it's pretty, like, the combat gets pretty challenging. So I know around Dread there was a lot of conversation about difficulty, and I guess Prince of Persia has a lot more accessibility options.
Very customizable difficulty. Yeah, you've got like your 4 or 5-ish presets, and then a lot of sliders to work with. Really dial it in if that's
and it has an option when you boot it up to either kind of play Super Metroid style, where like it doesn't tell you anything about where to go, like you kind of just figure it out. Or you can have a mode where it gives you an objective marker, more like Zero Mission style, where like it doesn't fill out the map, but it kind of goes like, you need to be over here, which I like. I like having those both options. I played without anything, and I thought the game played great without any of that help. But I like that it's there, and I feel like Metroid could learn something from that. I think that would be a great option for them to add.
How open is the full game? Is it where you can kind of progress wherever you want, and as you make progress, or is there like a linear sequence that they kind of want you to go to?
There's definitely like a series of events they want you to follow. Like, there is a primary quest line, but there's a lot of opportunities to like veer off. And it's generally the case that it'll be like, go find this dude in the forest. I don't know how far the demo goes. But it'll tell you like, go find somebody and give you like a kind of a, like the name of a place, like go to the top of the Citadel. And it's like, okay, I don't know where the Citadel is, but I guess I'm going to kind of head up. Like, so even when you are going along the main quest, there's a lot of vagueness on where you're actually going. But it just does a good job through I don't remember it ever doing any really unnatural gating. It would just sort of be like, do you have the ability to get through this room? If not, you probably can't get through it, though maybe there's some sequence breaky things you can do. So it feels pretty open. It never feels artificially closed or linear, I guess is what I would say. Like, the gates that are there are very well placed to just be gated around your actual abilities and not artificial.
That's the pitfall of something like the GBA Castlevania games, where it's so big that you can kind of just be lost, wandering and not knowing, like, just hitting those different gates and hitting a bunch of dead ends over and over again and not knowing exactly where the game wants you to go.
Yeah, this has a much better flow than Castlevania. Like, I generally found that, like, when I got a new ability, I kind of knew the general area I wanted to go to. And there were a couple times where I'd be like, I'm not sure if this is the area I'm supposed to go to, or if this is a side area, but then either way, you know, if you go to a side area, that's fine. I think it's better constructed than any of the Metroid style Castlevania games that I've played.
How often were you using the memories?
Almost never. Okay. I pretty much immediately forgot they existed. I like them as a feature.
Yeah.
But I completely forgot they existed.
It was pretty heavily marketed.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a neat idea.
It is cool. It almost reminds me of like the DS Zelda games, of being able to like draw a little note on your map. Mm-hmm. I like anything like that. That's another thing that Metroid could use, is like more custom map marker type stuff. Hopefully Nintendo is looking at this game, and, you know, Metroid Dread is fantastic. It's a 10 out of 10 game. But there are things in this game where you go, yeah, Metroid could learn a thing or two from that.
Mercury Steam, take notes.
Yes.
For the next Castlevania Lords of Shadow.
Oh, I would. That's why Castlevania Lords of Shadow is the best 2D Castlevania, or the best 2D Metroidvania Castlevania, is because it doesn't have all the horrible RPG elements. It's actually more like Prince of Persia. It's a great game. Everyone's just afraid to admit it.
I did not pick it up the last time. It went for sale for $3. Boy, I apologize.
I sent you so many links.
I know. It's on my wish list. Steam will remind me every single time it's $3.
You can play it in 4K on your Xbox Series X. It's great.
How's the story? Like, I was trying to burn through the demo real quick so I could talk about it on the podcast, but
my brain was still on Mirror of Fate. We can get into this if you want.
No, I'm not going to get into the rabbit trail of Castlevania.
It's honestly really good. Like, I think the story itself is fine. Mm-hmm. I think what really stood out to me is like the cutscene direction is amazing. Like, it's so heavily stylized. It has such a vibe. There's lots of times where like a character will be moving and like the background will disappear and you just get kind of like a color gradient, like these very anime style action sequences that are just crazy well animated. It's very un-modern Ubisoft.
I was going to say, is this the UB art team?
Yeah, this is the Rayman Origins, Rayman Legends team.
Yeah, they have some flair.
They do. Yeah, it's rare. I think this is better than either of those Rayman games. And I think it's a more cohesive vision than either of those Rayman games. Because those games are like artistically satisfying, but like kind of mediocre platformers. This is both artistically satisfying and a really good entry in its genre. Which is also kind of a cool throwback to like OG Prince of Persia, which wasn't exactly a Metroidvania, but kind of going back to that 2D, you know, mm-hmm. thoughtful platformer type game that the original was, I think works really well.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this pivot from Ubisoft, especially after Ghost Recon Breakpoint and Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which are just these massive bloated games with the just overstuffed. And to see them kind of pivot towards smaller releases that seem highly curated and just really well made and tight.
Yes.
It's great to see. And it's cool that they targeted Switch hardware first and foremost with this release.
Right. Yeah, we hadn't really mentioned that yet. But yeah, this is a game that they knew from the get-go, apparently, they wanted to make it run on Switch. And so that was, like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, all three versions are being developed at the same time. But, like, in traditional sense, we would say, like, Switch seems to have been their lead platform. Mm-hmm. Like, they made a Switch game first and then upported that to the other systems. Which also, by extension, means it runs very well on Series X and PS5.
I did see perfect.
The Digital Foundry video said that the Series X was running at 120 frames per second and PS5 was only at like 115. So, the PS5 can't handle.
I want those 5 frames.
Yeah, those are crucial frames for this game designed to run at 60 frames per second.
Those 5 frames are exclusive to the Microsoft.
Yeah, only the world's most powerful game console can get you over that 115 frames per second hump. And you're going to feel that lag.
I was missing those parries because of those 5 frames.
That's probably why. Yeah. No, it is. But it is. It's great on Switch where you're getting 1080p docked, 720p handheld, 60 frames per second with very, very rare drops. It is one of just the best feeling Switch games to play I've played in a long time. And maybe one of the best. It's got to be like that and Yooka-Laylee Impossible Lair are probably like two of the best multi-platform Switch releases we've had, because both of those are ones that targeted Switch first and then upported to everything else. Which when the weakest system is also the best selling hardware and hardware where, like in Prince of Persia's case, it's probably where your game's going to sell best.
Yep.
I think it makes sense, like make that system your focus. And I wish more companies had done that. It's kind of late now. But
yeah, it would have been cool if this was like a precedent that Ubisoft and other companies might have taken notice of, but it's a little too late. But
yeah,
it's neat that it happened.
Yeah.
I wish Nintendo targeted Switch hardware sometimes.
That would be. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the anti-aliasing like on Prince of Persia on Switch?
I don't think there is any.
Is that just something like the Switch just doesn't have anti-aliasing?
I mean, so I don't mind it if you're hitting native res, especially in handheld mode. If you're hitting 720 in handheld mode, so you are pixel perfect on that screen, then I'm kind of okay with there not being anti-aliasing. Like, it's crispy, but it's like a really nice crispy, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. There are good crispy frames.
Yeah, whereas on TV, I would still like some anti-aliasing. It might have like some basic FXAA or something, but it's, if there is anti-aliasing, it's very weak. It was not hard to count the resolution of this game. I just found the first slanted slope I could, and the pixels were very clean and easy to count. That comes out on Thursday. By the time you're listening to this, it's already out. I guess if you did like the Ubisoft early access thing, I think you can already get it.
Oh yeah, do we want to talk about the subscription model?
Oh sure.
And their comments about not wanting you to own your games.
Yeah, I have conflicted. So on the one hand, I am fine with subscription-based game services conceptually.
You have an Xbox.
I have an Xbox. I have Game Pass. Game Pass has been great for me. I have played a lot of games I would not otherwise play, and I wound up buying a lot of those games as a result of them being on Game Pass. But yeah, Ubisoft, I don't remember who it was at Ubisoft, but they had that comment today that was like, yeah, Ubisoft wants you to be comfortable not owning your games. Which, once again, I'm fine with playing a game through a subscription service, but I still would like the option to permanently own that game if I want it. Both just for me as a person and from a preservation standpoint, I think it is important that people be able to purchase things. And that applies, I mean, that goes beyond video games into like, I feel that way about a lot of like the Disney Plus stuff. Like, can I buy the Star Wars TV shows? I don't think so.
It felt like for the longest time, every year got worse for video games, but movies and TV shows were stood firm.
Yeah.
Up until like last year. And now DVDs and Blu-rays won't be sold in Best Buy and everything Zaslav did to the HBO Max.
Yep. Well, and even the places where you can buy them digitally, I mean, we saw, I think this did wind up getting reversed. But on PlayStation, I think it was Discovery Channel was just pulling all their stuff from PlayStation and was literally going to pull it off of systems, like not be like, oh, you can't re-download it, but like, no, we're going to go get it and take it away. Which is like the apocalypse kind of digital distribution thing that we all fear.
I mean, that's the nature of a digital license and not actually owning something.
Yep. Yeah. We need to come up with some, like, the reason this kind of works on PC is that all that's a lot of, you can get these games like DRM free in many cases, not in all. We need to get to a point with consoles where we have something similar to that, where you truly do own. If we're going to go digital, I would like to truly be able to own my digital stuff like I do if I buy a game off of GOG or something.
Well, you know, all these corporations were so gung-ho about NFTs and the blockchain and like having a ledger that certifies your ownership of a digital product. And yet, can I have that for a video game where I just own it and have that forever, please?
Yes. Yeah. Ubisoft, sell me the Prince of Persia NFT that is just a digital DRM free copy that I own forever of Prince of Persia.
If you
want to
call
Lost
it
Crown.
An NFT, it's fine. I'll be okay with it.
I will buy into that. Yeah. If we can, I 100% agree.
Oh, as long as you don't take it away from me on a whim.
Yeah. That is a weird. Yeah. NFTs really are exactly what all these companies are fighting against for every other kind of media.
Yeah. Because they can't profit off of me letting my brother borrow a game.
Right. Well, that's when you just sign into the same account on both your systems. Do a little fun sharing. My wife and I have 100% played Game Pass games together on a single Game Pass subscription from a laptop and Xbox. So.
No, that's
it's
true.
Pretty easy to do.
That's an easy workaround.
Yep.
Strange that there's no more restrictions on it, but I'm not going to bring it up.
No, that's how we did Sea of Thieves and we did Elder Scrolls Online like that. Worked great. So outside of Prince of Persia, we also, tonight when we're recording this, Golden Sun, released on NSO. I have fond memories of Golden Sun, but have only played like the intro since I was 10. I do.
Okay.
This was a game that my... I was a big Shining Force fan as a kid. I still am to this day.
And the tennis RPG.
Yeah. Golden Sun has... obviously, it's made by the same people. I didn't know that as a kid. I just, it had the kind of similar vibes to it. And it was a game that my friends had, and I would borrow from them and play. And I always thought it was a really cool game. Yeah, I have a lot of fond memories of this from when I was like 10. When did this game come out? 2001, 2002. Oh, literally when I was like 10.
Mm-hmm.
I have barely touched it since. I have heard from people that I trust that maybe it's not actually that great. I believe you said you have similar experiences with this.
Okay, well, I want to stop you right there and ask, what version of John Raritan enjoyed picking things from a menu in combat? Because that's just, it's just a JRPG-ass JRPG.
So here's the thing. John Raritan, even as a child, liked pretty graphics.
Okay.
And Golden Sun has pretty graphics.
Yeah, it's got the pseudo 3D thing going
on. Yeah, so there's like cool stuff going on. I never found it particularly like difficult, and I've always had an easier time with turn-based stuff as handheld games. Like, they're not games that I want to sit down at my TV and play, but they are games that I will casually play while like something else is going on. So like Pokemon, like I played a bunch of the Pokemon games on Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance as a kid. Because there's something different about it being on a handheld as opposed to on a TV. So I assume that's why Golden Sun was always fine with me. But like the Final Fantasy games on Super Nintendo, I had no interest in.
What, the Final Fantasy games on Game Boy Advance that were just the Super Nintendo games?
I didn't play the Game Boy Advance ones. I did play Final Fantasy 3 on DS and thought it sucked, but I think Final Fantasy 3 actually just sucks. I don't think that's me. Cause I've talked to some people who do like Final Fantasy and they were like, yeah. So, I don't think that's a me problem. I think that's a game problem.
So back to Golden Sun. I played it as a kid, and it was my first introduction to something like a Final Fantasy. The Game Boy Advance was kind of my portal into RPGs in general. So obviously Fire Emblem was a big one for me.
Yeah.
Mega Man Battle Network, which is a weird kind of RPG, but you do have like the running around in towns. The story plays out kind of like an RPG.
I was going to say, I think it counts in the same way that like Pokemon counts as an RPG.
Yeah. And then Golden Sun was like, this is just a fantasy world. It kind of is like Final Fantasy, but it's not exactly. I really enjoyed it. I think the one thing, it's been so long since I played it, though. I haven't gone back to it since I was a teenager. I tried replaying both of those games. I think I got through the first one, but never finished the second in like high school. But the thing that stood out to me is I remember those dungeons being real neat, because the way they work is that you actually use your magic abilities within the dungeons. They have an effect on the overworld. I guess maybe in a similar sense to how Pokemon did it.
Yeah. Like with the like cut and fly and surf and stuff like that.
Yeah, you have something like push, and it'll push a log, and then it will fill in a gap so you can walk through an area. Just like light Zelda-esque dungeons. But that's kind of annoying when you're trying to figure out how to get through an area and you're being interrupted by random encounters. And that's something that's just kind of hard to get your mind through in when you're going back to JRPGs in general, but when you're also trying to figure out a puzzle, it's especially frustrating.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I thought they were really good back then, but they also, there's nothing about them that really stands out decades later. Other than that, they were a neat pair of RPGs to have on the Game Boy, and it was cool that Nintendo published them during a time where they were lacking RPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they did. They really did feel like visually and thematically, they really did feel like just sort of lost Super Nintendo RPGs.
Yes.
Which was just because, yeah, like that's the thing. The Game Boy Advance had a ton of legit Super Nintendo ports. And some Genesis ports. Like you could play Shining Force on the Game Boy Advance and it was great. You could play Final Fantasy on the Game Boy Advance. They're great. But like Golden Sun was like, oh, like this is that, but it's actually new. And that was just a really cool concept, even if it may or may not be actually good. I'll have to find out. I will say the music is undeniably good.
Yeah, I wish Neil was here to say, to remind us why he thinks it's not great.
Yeah, I'm sure that, like, you know, learned RPG people could tell me exactly why it's bad, but then I would have to look them in the eye and be like, but you like Mario RPG and Paper Mario. And I refuse
those are
to
good.
Sit, I refuse to sit here.
Those
and
games have personality.
That, oh, this game. Hey, Golden Sun has personality. There's probably things wrong with it, but I don't think not having personality is one of them.
No, you're
Camelot,
not wrong.
Camelot knows how to squish and squash a sprite to convey emotion. That is their greatest strength. We
and
see
to really
it in this.
Make the GBA, whatever, it's not even a sound chip. It's whatever the mono speaker, just real squeak.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they pioneered the concept of putting an emoji above a character's head rather than like having the sprite change so that they could convey emotion.
That's fine,
here.
But then don't release a sequel like almost a decade later where your silent protagonist just actually has things to say.
Yeah.
Whiplash.
Given that there is a contingent, like obviously all of my like for Golden Sun is pure nostalgia at this point, not actual memory of what it was.
Right.
Is
same.
Given that, is Darkest Dawn actually worse, or did we just play it after and we don't remember?
That's a cooler name than Dark Dawn. I never beat that one.
Okay.
I don't have anything to say other than the learning that Isaac can just talk and being weirded out by it. And you play as his son who can't talk. He only has the emojis.
Oh, was that? Okay, so you weren't. So he talks, but you weren't playing as him.
Right.
Okay, I mean, that's, you know, that's like in Twilight Princess when Ocarina of Time Link shows up and he can talk, but you still can't.
Okay, yeah, that is how that works.
That's just how silent protagonists operate. They can only talk once they're no longer the main character.
It's in the name. Once they're no longer the protagonist, they're no longer silent.
Then they also lose the silence. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The neat thing about Golden Sun that I remember is the djinn system where you have these little elemental buddies that you find throughout the world.
Yeah.
And you collect and you can assign them to your party members to mix and match. There are elemental affinities, so I believe water was like the healing type.
Yeah.
But you could mix them with wind, and that would give you a different set of magic spells to work with. But the thing that I remember doing, and I'm not sure why I did this, if it was optimal for gameplay or if it was like a more like a story RP thing where I just gave the elemental djinn to whoever's affinity matched closest to it. Like Isaac is earth, so I gave all the earth djinn to him.
Which is probably like objectively the wrong way to play.
Maybe it was the right way to play. I just, it's kind of a flat if all you're doing is giving the same elemental djinn to the one that like matches. Because if that's the optimal way to play, then that's boring. But
right,
if mixing and matching is the right thing to do, and I just didn't know to do that at the time, then it's an actual like cool system.
Yeah, I 100% was not cognizant enough of how JRPGs worked as a kid to actually make use of this system. I think it was pretty random. Either that, or I may have just given all of them to the main character. because that's often how I played these games as a kid, was like the main dude would be crazy OP because I would give him everything. And then all the side characters would just be terrible.
Just scrubs.
And then I would wonder why I could never finish the game. Just soloing it.
That's why you would like the Mario RPG games. You only have like two characters to worry about.
Yeah, but that was when I was
some other guy.
I've grown as a person. If Mario RPG was a tactics RPG, I'd probably like it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
That's the thing that I've really learned.
It
about
would be
myself,
an upgrade for sure.
Is I can do even like old tactical RPGs. I can do maybe not Fire Emblem because the first Fire Emblem sucks, but I can do tactics. Just don't
it was
like
the first one.
Yeah,
but yeah, it does suck.
I'm just saying that like go back and play like Ultima 3 on NES, and that is a better tactical RPG than Fire Emblem.
I'm gonna look that up.
You should.
I'm gonna add that.
It's what inspired Dragon Quest. It's arguably the game that created JRPGs, despite being a Western RPG.
But it's a strategy game?
It's a RPG that's heavily influenced by D&D, and so the combat is like it's a top-down view, and you have your whole party on the field, and as you go through, you can like move your characters around in like a tactics game. Like you have like
okay,
a
yeah, but because D&D is a tactics game, yes.
Right. But then when
understood.
So Ultima got like super popular in Japan, and they were like, we should make these. And thus the entire genre of JRPGs was born.
So I should blame Dragon Quest for what happened.
Yes.
Where the step away from strategy.
Yes.
With JRPGs.
It's entirely Dragon Quest's fault.
Give me back the grid. The menu is fine. I don't mind a menu. I like a menu, but also a grid.
The other cool thing that Ultima 3 did on NES was that it emulated like field of view. So like everything that you couldn't see, that your character wouldn't be able to see, was just black. So like as you go into a building, you would get kind of this expanding field of view as it would open up to what was within your range of sight.
Oh, that's sick. For an NES game?
Yeah, it looks crazy. Everyone should play Ultima 3. It's way better than Dragon Quest. It's way better than the original Final Fantasy. It's awesome.
That means that there are at least two other Ultima games.
There are. They are still neat, but are a bit more rudimentary. And
were they pre-NES? Are those like computer games?
Yes, they're on like DOS.
Okay.
And they're just a bit harder. Like you can get them on GOG, but Ultima 3, I feel like, is pretty accessible if you've played NES RPGs. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ultima 1 and 2, you really have to want to go in playing some old school Western RPGs. Because Ultima 3 is also like one of the first old RPGs to have like a super complex like plot and like narrative system. I don't think it was 3, but the later Ultima games, I think, are also the games that invented like morality systems in games.
No way.
Yeah, like Ultima, everything that you know about video games, especially RPGs, is probably from Ultima.
You're telling me that Knights of the Old Republic didn't come up with morality?
No, yeah. Yeah, it's all Ultima, baby. So yeah, everybody go play Ultima and then get mad at Dragon Quest for ruining RPGs. And all that led to Golden Sun.
Good.
Yep.
Now we have modern day Camelot. I'll just throw out this question. Do you think modern day Camelot could make another Golden Sun?
I mean, they could. I don't know that they should.
Could they pull it off? Because I remember us getting all excited about Mario Golf having a little bit of like an RPG mode. And boy.
Yeah. I would like to see them lean back into making a real RPG, but I don't know if we'll see that.
It's been a couple of years since they put out anything. You have to wonder what they're working on.
Well, wasn't Mario Golf was Mario Golf 2 years ago already? I guess.
I think it was 22.
Yeah. Okay. But our last little story of the day. This one's going to be weird because technically, when we're talking about this, this hasn't been announced yet. But we have privileged information, as in we got a press email that was embargoed. But Ace Combat 7 is coming to Switch in July, I think. Yeah, July 11th. This was a game that came out years ago on like Xbox One and PS4. And along with the announcement, like we've seen like some trailers and stuff like that. This looks like it should be a pretty good port. I feel like Ace Combat, obviously, like it's a flight sim. I feel like that ought to be like there's a lot of areas where you could pinch and tug that to make it run on Switch without it being super obvious.
Hmm.
You know, like if you lower the resolution of the grass on an island that's a long way away in an Ace Combat game, can you even tell? Because this the stuff we've seen of this so far looks, you know, obviously lower resolution, but honestly pretty darn good. Have you ever played any of the Ace Combat games?
I have not. They sit in my Steam wish list and they'll go on sale, much like Castlevania Lords of Shadow, and I'll look at them and then I'll pick something else.
Yeah. They're very much in the I would put them in like the same vein as, you know, a like a Star Wars Rogue Squadron or something, where it's a flight sim, but it's not like a super in-depth sim. It's much more like arcade style. And they're pretty fun. I did not finish Ace Combat 7.
This is Unknown Skies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one that I've known about for years now. So
this was actually one that I was excited about when they announced it, because it was one that when the PS4 VR came out, they were like, Ace Combat 7 is going to have VR support. And I was like, hell yeah. I'll play the crap out of that in VR. And then they're like, psych, it'll have like two VR missions, not the actual main game. I was like, oh, never mind. So that kind of turned me off from it. But I am excited to try this on Switch. I think there's the potential for this to be a very good port. And I am excited to look at it more.
You say this is more of a sim or less of a sim than Squadrons?
Than Star Wars Squadrons?
Yeah.
I would say less of a sim.
Okay.
Because, Squadrons is much more in that. I feel like any space game where you can, like, divert power to engine shields and weapons is definitely more into the sim category at that point. If you're having to, like, micromanage your power systems, that is a sim.
I thought that was a sim, and then I played VTOL VR with a friend who's like really into simulators, and
there's degrees.
Squadrons is basically an arcade game in comparison.
But it's definitely more of a sim than, say, Rogue Squadron.
Right.
It goes in degrees. I would say for a console game, it's pretty simmy. I think once you get into PC, then you can get way more ridiculous with your simulation. Because you got more buttons, but there's limits to what you can do on a controller. Have you ever played Star Wars Squadrons in VR?
I have.
That's a great VR.
Excellent. That's one of the first things I did when I got my Quest 2.
Yeah,
is play that. But maybe I was a little too eager because that game will give you motion sickness.
If
that's
the first
thing you're starting out with. Yeah,
absolutely. I don't have too much trouble with motion sickness in VR, but like my wife has tried those. My wife got motions. So when you play it on PSVR, like it's in your headset, but then it's also on the TV. And my wife was sitting next to me while I was playing it in VR one time. And she was like, you need to stop doing what you're doing because it's making me sick watching it on the TV. You're not even in it. And she's like, yeah, but because I'm like, if I get into VR, I'm like, I want to like loop through stuff and do all kinds of fun stuff. Yeah, that game's great. Put that on Switch. If it can run on PlayStation VR, it ought to be able to run on Switch. We know from No Man's Sky that the Switch is basically a PlayStation VR as far as power goes.
Make it compatible with Labo VR.
Oh, beautiful. Be great. Play it at a crazy low resolution.
Like 240p?
That's plenty of resolution. Well, like half of 240p because they have to split it down the middle of the the screen. With that, we're going to call it a nice short episode tonight. If you have anything we should talk about, because we're going to be looking for topics as we wait for things to happen. We do have an Xbox Direct that we should be able to talk about next week. So that's exciting on our Xbox podcast. But if you have any ideas for topics for things we should talk about while we wait for hopefully maybe a February Nintendo Direct, send them in to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow us on Twitter, where I never post anything, but you can follow anyway in case I occasionally do that. That's @ connectivity NWR. yeah, thanks for joining me, Alex.
Of course.
Oh, and Paper Mario. We're supposed to be playing that at some point. Game Club.
Oh,
Paper
right.
Mario.
We're going to do Paper Mario Game Club at some point. Have we talked about that? I don't know if we have. We should probably like announce that and come up with a schedule.
Yeah. I think we said like end of this month, but who knows?
What if I just play Golden Sun instead?
Is you could fair? Talk about like Golden Sun in the Paper Mario episode as if you were talking about Paper Mario.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to always, I'm not going to play any of the Paper Mario games. I'm just going to play a different game for every single one and just see how long it takes you guys to figure out what game I actually played.
As long as it's an RPG, then
sure.
Count. Talk about Ultima 3.
Okay. All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.